Affairs Committee. Regent Henson chairs that committee. Regent Henson.
Thank you, thank you, Chair Higdon. Nice to see you all. And I also want to kind of show that I'm visited the WKU store the last time I actually made it into Bowling Green. And I am kind of a walking advertisement for the WKU store. You can get this lovely pullover shirt for a very reasonable price and all these pins and such. So I just want to kind of make a plug for the WKU store before we start the Student Affairs Committee report.
And Regent Henson, your big red pin far outshines mine. That is about 3 inches, I think.
Oh, of course. Well, I'd always have to have the bigger one. But do you like the pullover? Isn't this kind of, this is one of the new styles that's in the WKU store. But I thought I would wear all the, kind of put me in that WKU go top spirit this morning while I was getting ready to get on the Zoom call with you all. Now, Dr. Logan, are you available?
Yes, ma'am, I am.
And how are you, my friend?
Doing well, thank you, Regent Henson. Glad to be here.
Would you like to start your presentation, sir?
Yes, ma'am. Thank you so much. Thank you, Regent Henson. Thank you to the board, President Caboni. I have a brief information items to share with the board from the Student Affairs Committee this morning. And I'm going to share my screen. Very good. I'm going to just look for a quick affirmation from anybody that this is something that you can see. All right. Thank you. And thank you for this moment to speak to you today. I wanted to give a brief update on enrollment for the spring and then provide information about our newest facilities on campus, our first-year village that's coming online this fall, but more importantly, to talk a little bit about the programming that we're putting together for the freshman first-year village experience, our living learning communities, and to provide this information to the board. I've got very, very capable and prominent professionals within our institution who are going to be presenting with me today. Blair Jensen, our Assistant Director from House and Residence Life, and Sierra Waller, Assistant Director from the Center of Innovative Teaching and Learning, who were co-leaders in this program development, and they're going to provide you with an update on our living learning communities coming online this fall. First, I wanted just to talk real quickly about spring registration numbers. We talked about this at the last board meeting about where we were and where we were tracking. We were tracking very closely to on target for spring enrollment. And this is our enrollment from this first week of school for the spring. I don't want to spend a lot of time on here because there's more exciting things to hear from our staff about and faculty about our living learning programs. But I do want to highlight just where we are with spring persistence. And you can see a little bit of the variance between fall 19 and 20 in terms of number of students from the fall who have enrolled in the spring. But more importantly, to look at these percentages of persistence. And in some cases, in most cases, slightly above where we were last year. Overall enrollment for spring retention, and this is continuing students, is up. It's 0.8 of a point. That's up. And it's and that's a significant number when we talk about conversations of persistence. And what would be good in a good year, as Susan had said, spring enrollment and spring enrollment looks healthy. This looks good in a good year. In a year of COVID and the challenges of the pandemic, this is an exceptional, momentous enrollment. And I think the fact of the compounded extenuating circumstances that our students endured to be on campus this fall and to be engaged in our institution and education, it's a culmination of the faculty in the classroom, the support staff, and the services that we've provided across the institution that helped us maintain this registration as if it were a normal year without any complications. So what that looks like,
could I jump in and say, I want to mention this directly and explicitly. The university, the students, everyone's appreciation for the remarkable effort of our faculty and our staff to make this happen. This occurs only because of one reason, because the individuals who have contact with our students invest their time, their effort, and their energy in helping these young people understand how important a degree is, but also getting them back, getting them registered, getting them enrolled, and addressing any hurdles they might have, personal or financial. And so I just want to call out the extraordinary efforts of our faculty, our staff, and in particular on the staff side. I heard the stories of ACDC, I'm not supposed to call it that, but our advising center and development center for students who provide advising for first year and second year students, doing advising calls at 6 a.m. and 10 p.m. at night to make sure that these young people can get in their courses and we help support them. Same thing with our ISEC Academy and all the students who participate there. All of our student affairs support staff and all of our faculty who do advising and support as well. It's been a remarkable, remarkable effort.
Thank you, Dr. Caboni. I would like to echo that. Truly, it is a community effort that has made this a successful spring enrollment, and I'm really excited to show you spring enrollment this week. And you know, the dust will still settle. There's still some activity that's happening this week, but we're within 13 students of where we were last spring, and so that's really an exciting piece. Even though that spring 2021 doesn't make sense. 2021 is what that's supposed to read. And so I appreciate that. And I also wanted to talk to Regent Nichols' comment earlier about students in the fall, what this, of these students coming in from their year of COVID experience in high school, how we're going to be prepared to help support them. And I had a conversation this week with our Dean of Students, Dr. Lynn Holland, and truly, you know, we talked about the importance of engagement across any elements of engagement that we can find, and really how that is going to be a focus for the fall in terms of how we're finding an engagement opportunity for students. And that's a very broad term. That's a classroom experience. That's a student organization group. That is all of the amazing things that we can do across the institution. Just finding a connection is going to be monumental and very important. And a great example of an engagement and a connection is our Living Learning communities and our Living Learning programs. And so I'm going to turn over this presentation to Blair Jensen and Sierra Waller to give you some more updated information about this program as it comes online. This is an existing program. We're expanding and enhancing this program with the First Year Village, and it's really going to be a hallmark of what this our First Year Village living experience can be for our new students coming to the Hill in the fall. Starting fall 21. So if you will join me in welcoming Blair Jensen and Sierra Waller.
Good morning, board. I will speak for my colleague Sierra. We are truly honored and humbled to have the opportunity to share with you our work with Living Learning programs. So since the 2008 AACNU publication titled High Impact Educational Practices, What They Are, Who Has Access, and Why They Matter, in which learning communities were categorized as a high impact practice, greater attention has truly been paid to ways to incorporate this construct into higher education. But learning communities themselves are not new. In fact, the earliest learning communities can be traced all the way back to 6th century BCE, in the highly structured Greek colony of Croton in southern Italy. It's there that Pythagoras taught disciples who lived and studied together. So in actuality, the earliest learning communities were in fact residential learning communities. So since 2008, there has been a renewed recognition of the importance and impact of the integration of living and learning for students residing on campus, and as a result, a resurgence of learning communities and residential learning communities. But really, there's a significant variation in the organizational characteristics of these communities. So before we get too much into our content, we wanted to provide you with a working definition for living learning communities. So we truly define LLCs as cohorts of students that are intentionally grouped together in a residence hall who have a shared academic experience along with co-curricular learning activities for engagement with their peers. So when we say living learning communities, that's truly what we mean. That's our working definition. Now, you're going to note that throughout the presentation, we make reference to living learning programs. Living learning programs really serves as an overarching umbrella that incorporates living learning communities, LLCs, and interest or theme-based housing known as living learning programs. So it's important to note the distinction. All LLCs are LLPs, but not LLPs are also LLCs. So there's a slight differentiation there. So this is our working definition for living learning communities. Now, you might be wondering, why we've had so much focus on LLPs. Why are they so important? What does it mean for students participating in these important programs? Well, the National Study of Living Learning Programs, which was actually developed in 2003 and then administered in 2004 to undergraduate students at 34 different post-secondary institutions in the United States and obtained responses of over 24,000 students, actually found that even just 1 year of experience in a living learning program had lasting effects for students. So those that had lived in an LLP during their first year had higher levels of academic self-confidence, they were more likely to be a mentor to other students, and remained more committed to civic engagement even 3 years later. So the investigators actually followed up with the students that participated in the initial 2004 study in 2007 and were able to identify these outcomes. Now, a more recent study that was conducted in 2020 really looked at the relationship between residential learning community participation, engagement, and perceived gains in learning. And what they found was that there were increased levels of student participation, interaction, collaboration, and faculty engagement with students participating in these programs. So as with most high-impact practices, it's not enough to simply offer these opportunities and to invite students to participate in them. It's truly what we do while the students are participating in these programs that has the lasting impact. We also wanted to share with you this morning some numbers related to persistence. So you can see there on the screen the national persistence rate of first-year students that participate in living learning communities at 93%. Just below that, you'll see our institutional persistence rate of first-year students residing on campus at 90%. So first-year students living on campus at WKU are persisting from their fall to spring semester at a 90% rate. And you'll also see our institutional persistence rate of first-year students at 88%. So we can see that there is a small gap between students that participate in these communities and those that persist from semester to semester. So we know that we can have a greater impact on students' persistence by offering these influential programs. And as if that wasn't enough to convince you of their importance, I'm going to invite my colleague Sierra to share a little bit more information with you, starting with some testimonies from students participating in our current programs. Sierra?
Hello. So based on that research, our smaller assessment group, we found that living learning programs have the greatest impact on a student's academic transition to college, social transition to college, and sense of belonging. When a student's academic transition is smooth, and when their social transition to college is smooth, and when they feel that they belong and have that sense of belonging to the institution, the likelihood that that student will be retained increases drastically. The next few slides will show why we have selected these as our outcomes that we intend for our living learning programs to deliver on. So the following student testimonies will highlight the importance of those that I just spoke to, with this first one kind of highlighting the importance of a smooth academic transition. As you can see that this student is saying that they're more involved on campus and they've gained valuable study groups to help with their academic transition. The next student testimony highlights the importance of that social transition. So looking more at how being involved in cultural events and finding resources and opportunities that they're interested in has improved their experience here at WKU. The last testimony highlights that sense of belonging, making friends, being able to communicate with people, learning about pronouns and different things. So we look at these student testimonies as they speak to those three outcomes that we hope for our programs to deliver on. New this year, we have worked with the Office of the Provost to develop the LLP Faculty Fellows Program. Similar to the direction of other universities, the Faculty Fellows Program will assist in the coordination, planning, pedagogy, and assessment of our academic LLCs. This summer, our Center for Innovative Teaching and Learning will host an LLC Faculty Fellows Summer Institute for training that, as my director will say, we hope will not only serve to share best practices, but also facilitate cross-disciplinary cooperation and lay the foundation for future interdepartmental cooperation. Together, this has the potential of enhancing WKU's first-year experience as well as the Colonnade program with linked courses and curriculum requirements in our academic LLCs. So this slide kind of goes over just a little bit of that position description of our faculty fellows, the expectations, and the communication and relationship building that we're hoping that this new group will provide for our students. We really want to have our faculty engage with our students in these new programs. Next, we move into the numbers. So for the 21-22 academic year, we have 21 living learning programs, 13 of which serve as our academic living learning communities. So as my colleague Blair shared earlier, the difference between the overall living learning programs and living learning communities. Our 13 academic living learning communities require two linked courses in the academic unit, a Colonnade course, or a cross-disciplinary experience. This allows advisors to curate more cohesive schedules for our students and extend the learning experience across courses. For example, in our Leadership Communication LLC, students will take Colonnade courses Leadership 200 and Communication 145, which is part of our public speaking course. Where the linked curriculum will allow students and the faculty to discuss aspects of leadership and communication styles in both courses and link assignments, such as having speeches that really speak to the aspects of leadership. So we would like to see those crossovers in those courses where students are having that cohesive learning experience. Other cross-discipline LLCs include our new addition, sustainability, where our students will have the opportunity to cross-examine the lens of sustainability through geography, the environment, social equity, and economic stability. Our SEAS LLC creates the unique opportunity for an interdisciplinary approach within the unit for our students in that community to discover the crossovers and careers and different majors and offerings in our School of Engineering and Applied Sciences. Our other academic LLCs include agriculture, business, criminology, education has their top of class LLC, exercise science, forensic science, School of Media, Nursing, and Psychology, which has a wonderful acronym, PSYCH, Psychology Students Yearning to Climb Higher. And, of course, the Citizenship and Social Justice Academic LLC. Part of that, we have 8 living learning programs that are interdisciplinary and interspace. Some communities, like our ISEC Academy, which is our Intercultural Student Engagement Center Academy, allow students to take up to 2 linked courses to foster a shared academic curricular experience along with a co-curricular and programmatic engagement to foster community. Other living learning programs that I, in addition to ISEC, include Chinese Flagship, Global Learning, our second-year ISEC Academy, which we're really excited about for returning students, Stonewall Suites, which speaks to our LGBTQIA students, ROTC, our Summer Scholars Program, and a Transfer LLC. Sorry, I thought I heard someone chiming in there. So to the numbers that we have on the slide, the 21 living learning programs are housed in 8 residence halls, including our First Year Village, Minton Hall, and Hilltopper Hall. These LLPs represent a total of 834 students. The housing application has been open since December 1st, and that's where students indicate their interest in our LLPs, which this date is about a month and a half later than last year. But to date, we have 369 students that have indicated interest in an LLP, which represents about 28% of the total number of new applicants and new students who have applied for housing. We are looking forward to seeing this number climb as more students apply for housing and with our spring recruitment and promotion. Lastly, we invite you to take a virtual VIP look inside our newest residence hall as part of our First Year Village, Normal Hall. And as you're looking at this video, which highlights our beautiful building here, we'll open up any questions that you have. So if you have any questions, feel free to ask myself or Blair. Also, if you would like access to this presentation to kind of look over it a little bit more, we're happy to share that with you all.
Sierra, this is George. Great presentation by you and Blair. question is, of the group that's already signed up, what's the diversity breakdown by gender, race, and ethnic as you go into these elements?
That's a very interesting question for asking. Thank you so much. I don't have those numbers available with me right now, but I can definitely provide those to you and the board here in just a little bit.
Okay. Because, I mean, it's beautiful, but I know that we've done well from a diversity standpoint in recruiting, but I'm just seeing if this is such a great program, which I totally fully support, and it is. It's just making sure that we've got the diversity breakdown of that so that everybody's really getting the benefit, because that'll give us valuable information as we continue to improve it year after year. So that'd be helpful. Thank you.
And that is something that we're definitely aware of. This year, for the first time, we've created a phase process. We know that some of our students from different backgrounds are underrepresented scholars tend to apply a little later for housing. So we have a phased process to make sure that we're being aware to extend that opportunity in an equitable way. So we can give those opportunities and have the chance for all students to participate in the LLCs, not just our students that are first to the call there and applying in December and early January. So we've been very aware of that, thinking about different ways that we can collaborate with our partners and others across the campus to make sure that our LLPs are diverse and inclusive.
Thank you.
Sierra, I have a question. When do the students that are applying to WKU first become aware of these programs? Is it when they initially apply, or is it when they go have already accepted and they're decided that they're going to WKU and they are enrolling? Applying for housing?
Sure. So we actually have a website where we highlight our LLPs all throughout the year. Our housing and residence life and our admissions team always go through and make sure that in any of our recruitment programs and events that we have, that we're showcasing and highlighting these opportunities for students. So that advertising and promotion is available all throughout the year. However, the first opportunity for them to indicate their interest in an LLP is on that housing application that opens December 1st. So that's where they're able to indicate their preference and have the first opportunity to say, hey, that one seems interesting to me. I think I want to learn more about it. But from there, we recruit and we promote all throughout the spring. So even in our preview days and our other spring admission events, we're constantly informing students about these opportunities and pointing them to our website, connecting them with faculty, connecting them with students that are a part of these programs. We also have our program specialist, Kirsten Hooks, who personally makes calls to students to make them aware of the opportunities and what these LLP experiences look like. And Blair has just provided me with the gender breakdown of our LLPs, and we're looking at about 70% female and 30% male. We'll still be working on getting that the ethnicity breakdown to provide for you as well.
Thank you. Just curious, I know I should know it. What's the gender breakdown for the whole university?
About 60-40%. So 60% female, about 40% male.
Great. Okay. Thank you.
Just a comment on this, but, you know, under normal circumstances, this would be a great program. But I think during a pandemic, which may go on for some time, this is even more important in giving people a chance to interact and develop relationships. And it really sets Western apart from some other universities because it gives you a small college feel and experience in a setting where they have all the amenities of a major university. So great work to everybody. Thank you.
Thank you so much for that comment. And we are thankful for our program staff and faculty that through this year have found innovative ways to keep our students in our living learning programs engaged. And we're looking forward to enhancing that in the fall should we be in similar circumstances.
Well,
Blair and Sierra, thank you. Does anyone have any more questions for them?
Julie, I have a comment, if I can, an observation. I really appreciate the background from Blair and Sierra. It's excellent. I love the way that this was done, and I think it's going to be successful. But I want to go back just a little bit to the very beginning where Ethan presented this statistic about spring-to-spring enrollment. I don't think we made enough of that. If my numbers are correct, we're off, I think, about a thousandth of a percent from spring to spring. Now, I know from a relative, I just received a communication from a comparable regional comprehensive university a couple of states away, that same number on their campus is down 30%, 30. So I can't say enough about this number, spring to spring, and how important that is. I meant to say it at the time, but I just wanted to say, knowing what I know from a couple of our, couple of colleagues of mine, this is a tremendous, it's a tremendous achievement.
Dr. Logan, would you like to add to that?
Thank you, Regent Hinson. Regent Brinkley, I concur with your assessment. It is, it's a very challenging time for many institutions of higher education across the country in terms of what their fall enrollment looked like. Ours was very healthy. We're not the majority when we look at the way that we performed in terms of enrollment for the fall. And it was really a very concerted effort across the institution that helped maintain the consistency of our enrollment for spring. And those were unique among many. There are some other institutions that are doing well, but there are more institutions that have been challenged by COVID dramatically, as you have indicated in this conversation. So I also would echo that this is a big deal, and it's a very important part of where we are as an institution and how healthy we're going to be going into this next fall, and how well our students are performing. This is an important part for our students and for our students going forward. This is an important part of the story that we take to our potential prospective students also, in terms of how well this institution provides for their experience. And then to go back to Regent West, your comment about the promotion of living learning communities, living learning programs, as well as the new residence halls. We're leading with these items as promotional information that we're taking on the road virtually in terms of our recruitment and our outreach. So this is a very important part of our introduction to what the Hilltopper experience can be, and what opportunities we provide for our first-year students.
Really, psych students yearning to climb higher has to be the best use of an acronym I've heard in a while. Whoever thought that one up, I like it.
May I add something?
Yes, Cheryl.
We had some data analysis done, and it looks like it turned out that the average GPA for students in this just past fall semester was the same as it was in fall 2019, which is excellent. It was average GPA of 3.12, something like that, which says that not only were our students dedicated to getting doing their work and getting their grades and getting through the courses and enjoying their experience, but the faculty also helped them get through in a way that everyone could be successful. And so I thought that was actually a very interesting data point.
Congrats.
Regent Hinson, may I also make a comment, please?
Of course, Dr. Caboni.
The announcement, the inaugural, my investiture 3.5 years ago, almost 4 years ago now, when we talked about, just almost 3 years ago, when we talked about the first year village, I said then, and I've continued to talk about that not being around new buildings and pushing the community to think about how this is transformative in our first year experience. And so what you heard today is really the beginnings of us shifting at a public comprehensive university to an Oxbridge model, Oxford and Cambridge. And for the price point that we're hitting, the differentiation that creates in the state and the region, and the personal attention that's focused on academics and engagement, I know this will be a standout program, not just in the state, not just in the region, but nationally. It is a model that elite privates aspire to, and that we're able to do this at our price point because of the investment of our faculty and our staff, the opportunity with new facilities to shape them in a way that creates that community, I think is going to be powerful in many ways. Marketing, promotion, differentiation, but most importantly about altering that first year experience here at WKU. We've been shaping that freshman class. Last fall was the most qualified with GPA entering class in the history of the university. Those students are ever more hungry for an academic experience that is challenging and engaging, where they have contact with those full professors from the moment they set foot on campus. We deliver that already in the classroom, but exploding that out into the other 140 hours where they live and where they spend time not in class, I think is immensely powerful for retention, for the academic experience. And I was sharing with someone the other day, think about a first-year student who takes two courses that are co-taught and co-planned by faculty. You heard some of them. I'm fascinated by the notion of a speech class or public address class that would look at 1920 to 1950, about everything that happened there, the World War One, World War Two, the Great Depression, everything, all the great upheaval. But coupling a public address class with a history course, and then doing that alongside 24 colleagues and student colleagues where you really know your professor, where you sit down outside of class and have discussions in your living space, and you work together as teams on projects that at home that you bring to class together. And heck, maybe some faculty will walk down off the hill and come teach in the place where you live. That's unique among institutions like us. It's unique in higher education, and I'm really proud of the work we've done to get there. You think about the tethers that people have: athletics, Greek life, ISEC. This is just another touch, another way to engage those young people in a way that binds them together, bonds them to the institution, but also enhances the academic experience. Couldn't be prouder.
Thank you, President Cabone. Does anyone have any questions for Dr. Logan? Eric Rigdon, that wraps up the report from the Student Affairs Committee. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Henson, and thanks for your information item. We moved our